Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. Got any comments? Email me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Cast your vote for the show on Podcast Alley, podcastalley.radiodragnet.com. And become a fan of the show on Facebook, facebook.radiodragnet.com. Well, we begin with an iTunes review regarding the new feed. He writes, Adam, will you replace your other Dragnet podcast? Audio content seems the same, but this one adds video. I remember you mentioning this on this air, so I just search for it and subscribe. Can I unsubscribe from the other one? Seems a bit risky changing a very popular podcast this way, as some people won't find the new one. You might want to leave the other one up for a long while yet. And keep up the great work. While critics are a dime a dozen, I don't know too many people who could have kept this up for so long, learning as they went along. You've outlived the naysayers, and I enjoy your folksy commentary, momentary malapropisms, I think that was one of them there, and all other touches that make this an authentic and incredibly dedicated effort to share what you love with the world. Look for something in your tip jar from me. Might not be obvious who it's from, but compared to my cable bill, you're more entertaining. I rarely watch TV and a whole lot cheaper. Adding Great Detectives, and this is quite a bargain. Well, thanks so much for your comment. In answer to your question, if you have subscribed to this feed, then yes, you can unsubscribe from the old feed. At this point, we're not getting rid of the old Dragnet feed. Off of TalkShoe, the one that's been in the store. That is still how most people download the show. I'd say it's probably about 80% of the audience goes through TalkShoe to get the show. However, if you do have iTunes, I would encourage you to go ahead and switch. If you've got Zune, you should have the right feed already. The main reason I encourage you to do that is just so that you do have access to the videos. That's already taken care of for you, and we've made it as simple as possible. Plus, you never know with TalkShoe. You know, honestly, their business model has changed quite a bit, so I'm surprised nothing has changed regarding us being able to upload and host up there. Because, you know, when they first started, they were having a situation where host would be able to host their shows and earn money from advertising, but were never quite able to sell the advertising. So now they've kind of gone in a social networking type direction. But yeah, we're going to have this, you know, if you're listening to the TalkShoe feed, the feed that's been in the iTunes store forever, you can continue to do that for now. Don't have any plans on changing any time in the near future. One of my favorite sites on Dragnet is badge714.com. And they have several Dragnet-related articles. They have more than I remember, so they may have added some since I last checked. But if you go to badge714.com/, and you just click on articles, they have got a very interesting article by Ben Alexander writing about Jack Webb. And what he writes, he said that a lot of fans ask him, is it true that Jack Webb is a moody and unapproachable person in real life? And my categorical answer to them is this: nothing could be further from the truth. Whether he's a police sergeant or a marine sergeant, Jack doesn't change the stripes of his character. And you can take it from me, that means he's the same swell guy that I met 6 years ago. This sort of stuff has been going on for the past several years, and I don't understand why. The truth is that Jack works hard, very hard, but he does not work hard in order to escape from unhappiness, as some writers hint. He works hard just because he likes to work. When I'm not portraying Frank Smith, no one is happier than I am when I'm at my Ford agency selling. I just love to sell. Jack just loves to work on TV movies, that's all. It's an all-absorbing passion with him. So he really sheds a lot of light in this article, and I'm going to include this in the show notes at radiodragnet.com, but you can also just go over to badge714 to read it. But he includes in there a lot of insights. He said that on Dragnet, sometimes they did three Dragnet episodes in the same week. He says that we might finish one dragnet at 11 a.m., and by 11:15 a.m., we're working on the next dragnet. And he said they worked 3 weeks straight of, say, doing 2 to 3 episodes a week, and then they would stop, take a week off. While most TV shows would basically take a 4-day period. They would work, they would film the show, and then they would take off. So it was a different set. And he includes some nice tidbits of some people that Webb helped. He wrote, Eddie Coleman, our cameraman, is now a member of the American Society of Cinematographers because Jack liked him and got him into the union. Herm Saunders was a pianist at the Bantam Cock restaurant when Jack walked in one night and told him, you like people and you'll make a good casting director, and Jack gave him a job. And let me tell you something about Jack and me. About 3 years ago, I went to Jack and told him that my doctor advised me to lose 40 pounds, but I was worried what that would do to my characterization of Officer Smith, who had been established in the series as a fat guy. I explained that losing weight, the doctor told me, might enable my wife and me to have children. It had something to do with metabolism and the chemistry of my body. Jack said, if it was that important, of course I should go ahead and lose weight. And he said he'd write my dieting right into the script. That's what we did. And as a result, Leslie and I have two lovely children, Leslie, Beth, and Webb. So it does show, I think, this really special dynamic that Webb and Alexander had, where Alexander all understood Webb. So it's a fascinating piece. I'd encourage you to read the whole thing if you got time. But we're going to get into today's episode in just a second. Before we do, I do want to remind you of the two special offers we have going over at RadioDragnet.com. Coming in July, it is Dragnet 1968, the second season of the 1960s TV show, coming out on DVD for the first time ever. You can order it and for the first time have the opportunity to own a copy of the made-for-TV 1966 Dragnet TV movie. And also, you can get a free copy of The Shadow, Night of Darkness, or any other audiobook you might prefer instead, by going to audiblepodcast.com/oldtimeradio, and any audiobook or old-time radio set they have. Well, we're going to get into today's episode. This one is called The Big Number, so let's go ahead and we'll listen and then we'll come back.
Sound off. Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. You get a call that a bank has been robbed. From the MO, you know the job was done by a professional. He's made good his escape. Your job? Get him.
Documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, January 21st. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Didion. My name's Friday. It was 2:56 p.m. when I got to room 27A. Robbery.
Joe?
Yeah.
Sure cold out.
Yeah, paper says you'd warm up a little before the end of the week.
Well, I hope so.
How'd your weekend go?
Don't bring it up.
What happened?
At my house, there's only one thing that could happen.
What do you mean?
My brother-in-law, Armand. All the time, he just sits around the house, sits there and reads those detective magazines.
Doesn't he work?
If he's ever held a job, he's kept it a secret. Just moves around between the relatives. This year, it's Faye's turn.
He just sits around all day, huh?
Yeah. Reads those detective magazines. Always sent in for those books that are sent in the plain wrappers. You know, the ones that tell you how you can have a business in your own home.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, this time he really did it. He sent for one that tells you how to go into the house cleaning business.
Yeah.
I thought at first it might be a pretty good deal. You know, if it worked out, he could give Faye a hand with the house.
Uh-huh.
Well, Saturday morning, the book gets to the house with all the formulas and instructions for making the cleaners for the rugs and the upholstery.
Yeah.
First off, he borrows $5 from me to buy the stuff to mix the formulas. Then he goes to the kitchen and takes all of Faye's good pans to mix up the goop in. It smells terrible.
Uh-huh.
All those bleaches and soaps. And I'm sitting in the front room watching television. All in all, I'm pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
He comes in, he says the room is filthy and he's going to clean it. Tells me to get out of the room and that he's going to surprise all of us.
Yeah.
Well, he did. Faye and I took the kid down to the barber's to have her haircut, did a little shopping for the weekend. You should have seen the house when we got back, Joe. Just miserable.
Well, what had he done?
First off, he wasn't there. Left a note on the kitchen table telling us that he was out for a walk. I kind of figured what had happened, so Faye and me walked into the living room. Joe, you wouldn't believe it.
Is that so?
Faye almost fainted.
Pretty awful, huh?
Worse than that. Room was beautiful. Everything in it was clean as a whistle. All spotless. Curtains, carpet, the upholstery. Even the tables had been waxed.
Well, what's wrong with that? Sounds to me like a pretty good deal.
Faye.
Well, what about her?
Right away, she starts climbing all over me, reads me off for being so mean to him. Says all about how I should be ashamed of myself, said that I should have thought of the house cleaning gimmick myself. I should have given him a hand in cleaning up the place, and that the next day off, we have to do the whole house. I tell you, Joe, no matter what the guy does, it always ends up making me look bad.
Well, you say you've only got this year with him, huh?
Yeah. Then he goes to Faye's sister in Piedmont. I'll sure be glad when that time comes.
Yeah, don't blame me. Hot shot, I'll get it. 80T 211, bank robbery in progress. It took us a little over 4 minutes to get to the bank at the corner of Lebanon and Broadway. In that time, the bandit had completed the robbery and made good his escape. A radio car had arrived at the scene, and the officers had gotten a description of the car and of the bandit. They called the information into communications, and a broadcast was gotten out to all cars in the vicinity to be on the alert for the holdup man. 2:40 p.m., Frank and I arrived at the bank.
Back there, bank guard.
Yeah.
I couldn't help her. What do you want me to do? Try to stop him? Have him shoot that gun off? He'd have killed half the people in here.
I'm not saying that you should have actually tried to stop him. All I'm saying is that there is something that you should have done. You just stood there and looked at him. You could see the gun. There must have been something you could do.
I beg your pardon, sir.
You get away. You're probably in cahoots with the robber. You probably came back to get the rest of the money. Well, Gibson, don't just stand there. Stop these men.
We're police officers, sir.
You see, Gibson, they're police officers. Do you have a badge or something? After this, I don't think I'll trust anyone again.
Yes, sir. Here's our identification.
Oh, yes, Officer Friday.
This is my partner, Frank Smith.
How do you do?
Hi.
I suppose you want to ask me a lot of questions.
Well, there are some things we'd like to know, sir.
You'd like to talk in my office, I guess. It'll be more quiet there.
That'll be fine.
Would it be all right if Gibson came along? I'd like to have him see how a couple of real detectives work.
Yes, sir, I think it'll be all right.
Fine. Back this way. Oh, Officer Friday, this is Gibson, the bank guard, and I use the term loosely. This is Mr. Jones.
That's Smith, sir, Frank Smith.
Hmm? Oh, yes, Smith, sorry.
Go ahead.
Just sit down any place.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Now, you listen good, Gibson.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Allen, you were the victim, were you?
I certainly was. It was just 3 o'clock. Gibson was just putting up the chain across the door, you know, to keep people out.
Yes, sir.
Gibson was out there. I was in here in my office. Go ahead, Gibson. Tell the officers about it.
Yes, sir. Well, he parked his car right in front of the bank, and when he pulled up, I thought it was a customer trying to get in before the bank closed. I held the chain for him.
That was nice of you.
What happened then, Mr. Gibson?
As soon as he got to the doorway, I saw the shotgun. He had it kind of under his coat, you know. I tried to stop him, but he had the gun pointed right at me. He said that if I made a move, he'd as soon shoot me as look at me.
Mm-hmm. You sure it was a shotgun, eh?
Yes, sir. I could tell it was a 12-gauge. It was sawed off. Told me to get over in that little alcove near the entrance to our escrow department.
Mm-hmm.
I did. Then he told me to hand over my gun. I started to get it out of the holster. I thought that maybe I'd have a chance to surprise him, but he must have known what I was planning.
Why do you say that?
He told me to face into the corner, then he took the gun out of the holster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did what he told me.
What happened then?
He asked me where the manager was. I pointed out his office.
Well, to this time, did any of the people in the bank have any idea what was going on?
No, sir. The way he acted, he knew what he was doing. Right off, I knew there wasn't anything I could do. I kept thinking about the people in the bank. That shotgun didn't want anyone to get hurt.
Only bright thing you did.
All right, you want to go on? What happened then?
Well, like I said, he asked where the manager's office was. I showed him, and he told me he wanted me to go back there with him.
Uh-huh.
We walked back there. He put the shotgun under his coat, and by some miracle, nobody saw it.
That's where he brought me into the picture. He just walked in, told me it was a stick-up. He had this little leather bag, the kind a doctor uses.
Uh-huh.
He opened it up, told me to walk in front of him.
Uh-huh.
He made me carry the bag. Uh-huh. Kept the gun at my back all the time. I could feel it. Made me walk down the row of windows, the ones into the teller's boxes. At each one, he made me stop and ask the tellers for the money.
Did he touch anything at all, do you remember?
No, he wore gloves all the time. He was real careful, wouldn't touch anything. After I put the money into the bag, he'd tell each one of them that if they made a sound, he'd kill me, then come back and kill them, too. It was terrible. Almost scared me to death.
Well, who was it that turned in the alarm here?
Walter, the cleanup man, sir. He was in the back of the bank, and he came out of the vice president's office. He saw the robber, and then he sneaked back into the room and called you. The bandit just barely got out of the place when the police car pulled up.
We gave the other officers a description of the car and the bandit.
Yes, sir. We heard the broadcast. All the cars in the area have been alerted.
I wonder if I could have a drink of water, officer. I'm so nervous. I'm still not over it. My stomach's going to be grinding for a month.
You're a member of the Federal Reserve here, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the Federal Bureau of Investigation will be in on it, too.
Yes, sir.
Water's right over here. I keep it in the office for my pills. I have ulcers, you know.
Yes, sir.
Would you like a drink?
No, sir. No,
no.
Thank you. Well, what happened after the man finished taking the money from the cages?
He walked out of the front of the place and got in his car. By that time, I could hear the sirens of the police car coming. He just left. On the way out, he said if we told him anything about him, he'd come back and kill us.
Yes, and he looked right at me when he said it. You've got to give me some sort of protection. I'm not going to make a sitting duck of myself.
We'll take care of that, sir. Could you give us a description of the man, sir?
I've already given it to the two officers who are here.
Well, we know, sir, but if you wouldn't mind.
Of course not.
How tall would you say he was?
Oh, about 5'11", maybe 6 feet.
How old would you say he was?
30, 35, round in there.
Mm-hmm. How much do you think he weighed?
Oh, about 160, maybe more. I'm not very good at guessing weights.
How about his coloring? Was he dark or light?
Light. He had real light blonde hair. His eyebrows were almost invisible. They were so light that you almost couldn't see them at all. Same with his eyelashes.
Mm-hmm. How about his clothes?
Beg your pardon?
His clothes? What was he wearing?
Well, he had on a blue shirt.
No, I'm sorry, sir. I think it was a white shirt.
Was it? No, I'm sure it was blue. I remember because he was wearing a brown coat. I thought that he certainly didn't have very good taste, what with wearing a blue shirt and a brown coat. No, Gibson, no. The shirt was blue. No tie. Brown coat and black loafer shoes. I remember these because they were the only thing about him that looked good. They looked like those ones that are advertised in the magazines, you know, Skigums or something like that. Black.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything unusual about him?
I beg pardon?
Anything unusual about him? Anything that might cause you to remember him, know him if you saw him again?
Well, there were the bandages.
What's that, sir?
When he came in, he had bandages on his face. One over his right eyebrow, another on his chin, right here, sort of on the throat.
You mean regular bandages?
No, sir. They were those adhesive kind, you know, with the gauze and the tape all together.
Oh, yeah. And you say he had one over the right eyebrow and one on his chin?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
I still think it was a white shirt.
I said it was blue. Are you trying to say that I don't know blue when I see it?
No, sir. I just think that you might have made a mistake in all the excitement.
Officer.
Yes, sir?
It was a blue shirt.
All right, sir. How about his car, the one he got away in?
It was parked right out in front.
Did you see it?
Certainly, I saw it. I was standing right in the door when he drove away.
Well, can you describe the car for us?
Yes, like I told the other officers, it was a late model Buick, dark blue, a coupe.
I'm sorry, sir, but it was a green Ford sedan.
All right, now let's see if we can't let Mr. Allen tell his story, Mr. Gibson. We'll check it with you when we finish with him, all right?
I don't know what you're trying to prove with these officers. After the way you handled the affair, there's no use trying to impress them with your prowess as a detective. It was a dark blue Buick coupe.
Anything unusual about the car that you could see? Any dented fenders, stickers, windshield emblems, anything like that, would you remember?
No, I didn't notice anything special.
No, sir. It looked pretty new as far as I could tell.
All right, fine. Well, you two gentlemen have helped us a lot here. There are some questions we'd like to ask the other people in the bank.
Oh, yes, that's what the other officers said. I told them all to stay. You'd like to talk to them now?
Yes, sir.
Fine, I'll send them in here to you.
No, we can talk to them out there, sir. Be all right.
Oh, fine. Gibson, maybe you can help them.
Officer.
Yes, Gibson.
I didn't want to tell you while we were in there. He'd probably make some remark. I didn't even tell the other officers. It's about the license number of the bandit's car.
Did you get it?
Well, not all of it, sir. Just the first three numbers.
The bank guard went on to explain that in the confusion, he had failed to give the information about the license number to the other officers. We continued to talk to him. He told us that the bandit had tied a cloth over the rear license plate and that as he drove away from the scene, a corner of the cloth had come loose, and he was able to see the first three numbers of the plate. We called this information into communications, and a supplemental broadcast was gotten out. In company with agents from the FBI, we talked to the rest of the employees in the bank. From them, we got a fairly good description of the holdup man and of his car. They agreed that it was a late-model dark Ford sedan. With FBI agent Tom Ashford, Frank and I checked by the office and asked the stats office to make a run on the M.O. We checked the oddity file on R&I on the possibility that the tape might have been used to cover scars or other marks that would make identification easier.
9:46 p.m. We stopped and got some sandwiches and coffee, and then we went to the DMV offices.
Hi, Joe.
George, you know Frank.
Yeah, hi. How's it going, George?
This is Tom Ashford, agent from the FBI. He's working with us on this thing.
Oh, hi. Glad to know you.
Yeah, same here.
Well, where do we find the files here, George?
Oh, what's the number again?
1U5. That's all we have.
Not much. Oh, you'll find the files for that number in these drawers here. You know what kind of car it is?
Yeah, Ford sedan, late model. We're not sure what year.
Uh-huh. Oh, go to it. I don't envy you.
Yeah. 9,999 possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it for the night. I think I'll shove off. Anything you guys need, there'll be somebody here. You can give me a call. I'll leave my home number on the desk.
Right. Thanks a lot. Good night, George.
Good night. Good night. Hope you find it before I get back.
Yeah. So do we.
Well, let's get to it.
Right.
Let's see. 1U5. It took us the next 8 hours to go through the almost 10,000 license registrations. Each file card had to be checked for a similarity of make and model. Each automobile in the Los Angeles area was listed, and then each one in the entire state. Each of them had to be checked out. 6:02 a.m., Tuesday, January 22nd. We finished checking the files.
That does it.
I didn't know there were so many cars in California, let alone that many with a license that begins with 1U5 in the Los Angeles area.
What's the total, Joe? How's it look?
Well, we got a place to start here. 302 names. 6:30 a.m., we checked back into the office, and then we went home to get a couple of hours' sleep. At 8:30 a.m., Frank, Tom, and I met in the robbery office. Captain Didion had assigned four other teams of men to work with us. The FBI had also assigned additional agents. The list of possibles was divided up, and we began to check them out. We spent 3 days on it. In each instance, we didn't talk to the person involved directly, but to their neighbors. We didn't explain what it was that we were after, merely that we were conducting an investigation. We ran into the usual false leads, the usual petty jealousies, and the neighborhood feud. It all served to slow us down and make the job more difficult. There'd been no replies to the local or the APB that we'd gotten out on the car or the bandits. The stats office had come up with two possibles on the MO. These were both checked out, but led us nowhere. We went back to checking out the license plate numbers. January 28th. The names on our list were down to seven. The next one was a Mr. Ivan Q. Field. We rang the bell to the house next door and waited.
Yes?
Sorry to bother you, ma'am. Police officers, wonder if we could talk to you.
Police? Well, what's it about? I haven't done anything.
No, ma'am. We'd just like to ask you a couple of questions about your next-door neighbor, Mr. Field.
I should have known. I thought a couple of times about calling you about him myself. Miserable man.
I wonder if we could come in, ma'am. Might be better than talking on the porch.
You just bet you can. Come right in. I'll tell you what you want to know.
Thank you very much.
What do you want him for? What's he done?
Well, we're just conducting an investigation, ma'am. A few things we'd like to know about Mr. Field.
Uh-huh. Well, you don't have to play cozy with me. I know what kind of people they are. Can't understand it either.
Ma'am?
I said I couldn't understand it. His brother's so nice, a real gentleman. Seems hard to believe that they'd even be related, let alone be brothers. Nothing but trouble since he and his wife moved in.
You mean it's not their house?
Oh, of course not. Don't think either one of them could afford the rent on a one-room apartment, let alone a house.
Would you know if they have a car?
No, no, not them. Like I said, I don't think he's ever worked. Just lives off his brother. His brother has a car. It's real nice.
What kind of a car is it, ma'am? Do you know?
Yes, it's a Ford.
Do you know what model?
Model?
Yes, ma'am. Is it a coupe or a sedan?
Oh, sedan. Real nice. Sort of a dark green. Only I guess it really isn't dark. Then it isn't light, really. Just green. Pretty, though.
Yes, ma'am. Do you know if Mr. Field is in right now?
Yes, I think so. I saw him out in the backyard a couple of hours ago, him and his wife. She was prancing around in one of them skimpy little sunsuits. Terrible. No decency at all. I tell you, officer, neither one of them's any good.
Do you know what Mr. Field does for a living?
Oh, you mean does he work?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, no. At least I've never seen any indication that he does. All he does is just sit around the yard and throw rocks at my cat. Terrible. That's what I was going to call you about. Isn't there a law or something about throwing things at poor, dumb animals?
Yes, ma'am.
Of course, cats aren't really dumb. Lots of times I think they're a lot smarter than some people I know.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could describe Ivan Field for us, ma'am.
Oh, sure. He's kind of a little man, not very big.
About how tall, ma'am?
Oh, maybe 5'7".
How about his coloring?
You mean his hair?
Yes, ma'am.
Dark, very dark.
It lets us out.
Mm, it looks that way. Well, thank you very much, ma'am. Sorry to cause you all this trouble.
Oh, no trouble at all. Are you going to arrest him now?
No, ma'am.
Well, why not? What about the rocks and my cat?
Well, I think the SPCA are the people you want to talk to on that.
Well, all right. But I tell you right now, Mr. Field isn't going to like it. He likes my cat. He isn't going to like the idea at all when he hears about it. Just wait until he gets home. I'll tell him about his brother's been acting.
Oh, just a minute, ma'am.
Yes?
You mean that the man living next door isn't Ivan Field?
No. I didn't say it was. It's his brother, Harry.
Brother?
What's the matter with you, young man? Don't you hear well? Everything I say, you ask me to repeat.
Well, I don't mean to, ma'am. Just that I want to be sure of what you say.
What's going on here? First you ask me a lot of questions about Mr. Field, and then I tell you that he isn't home. He and his wife went back east for the holidays. They haven't come back yet. While he was gone, he said that his brother could use the house. I thought at first it would be nice. Then I found out. Harry is nothing like his brother, nothing at all.
I wonder if you could describe him for us.
My, you want to know about everybody, don't you?
Well, we just like a description of Harry Field, ma'am, that's all.
Well, he's taller than Ivan. Harry must be close to 6 feet. Doesn't look anything like Ivan in any other way. Ivan's dark and Harry's light. His hair almost doesn't have any color. He's real blonde.
How long ago did they move in?
Well, now, let me see. Elizabeth, that's my Persian cat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Elizabeth had her last litter in December. December the 12th. Harry and his wife moved in the next morning. I remember that because I was up most of the night with Elizabeth. She didn't need me. Awfully independent. But it was the morning that they moved in. Oh, I remember it well. Elizabeth had 6 little kittens. It was December the 13th when Harry moved in.
And they've been using Ivan Field's car?
Oh, my, yes. Hardly a day goes by but what they don't drive it somewhere.
I wonder if we could use your phone, ma'am.
Oh, sure. It's on the table there in the hall.
Thanks. I'll check the name through R&I, Joe.
Okay. Would you happen to know if this Harry Field has any marks or scars on him?
Well, now, let me see. I think so. Seems to me that I saw him and his wife out in the backyard one day. He was wearing swimming trunks, and she was in one of those sun suits I told you about. Graceful.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, it seems to me that he had a scar on his leg. Just above the knee. I think it was the right leg.
No, what I meant, ma'am, was does he have any marks on his face, on his forehead, or on his chin?
No marks.
Oh.
Oh, wait a minute. The other day I noticed he had a cut over his right eyebrow. It looked like he'd been in a fight. Probably a drunken brawl.
Joe?
Yeah,
anything? Talk to Cunningham. He checked the name. Looks like it might be the same one.
What's that?
They paroled a Harry Q. Field from San Quentin. Description checks out.
When'd they parole him?
December 10th last year. Did a term for robbery.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
January 28th, 4:30 p.m., we called the office and told them of the latest developments. Tom Ashford called the local FBI office and arrangements were made to take Harry Field and his wife into custody. A further check on him was made through R&I and we found that his record listed 4 arrests for armed robbery with only 1 conviction. He spent 4.5 years in San Quentin before he'd gotten his parole. The name of his brother was also checked. He had no previous record. The car in Field's driveway matched the one used by the bandits. 5:12 p.m. The men from robbery arrived and the plan for taking Field was formulated. The working detective knows that to successfully apprehend an armed and dangerous suspect, he must act quickly and employ the one big advantage on his side, the element of surprise. By moving rapidly before the suspect becomes aware of any attempt to apprehend him, the officer, in many cases, can not only avoid bloodshed, but can often have a better chance of preserving any and all physical evidence necessary to prosecute the suspect. 5:36 p.m. We were ready to move in.
All set, Joe. The men are on back.
Good. No indication he knows what's up. The lights are still on.
Let's hope it stays that way.
Officer? Mr. Friday?
The Jenkins woman.
Yeah.
Officer!
Ma'am, would you mind keeping your voice down? We don't want Field to know we're here.
Well, I'm not talking loud, but there's something I want you to know.
Well, it'd be better if you went back into your house, ma'am. Just stay there till this is over, will you?
That's sort of what I want to tell you about.
Ma'am?
Well, I got to thinking, and I figured maybe Harry wasn't too bad a sort after all.
We don't want to be rude here, but I think it'd be better if you go back in your house. All this talking's loud to let him know that we're here.
But that's just it. I don't want anybody hurt, so I called him.
What?
I called him. Told him he didn't have a chance to give himself up.
Unknowingly, Mrs. Jenkins had made it impossible to take the suspect without violence. By warning him, she had put him on the alert. We had no alternative now but to apprehend him as best we could. 5:40 p.m.
McCaleb and Crowley are covering the back. Other fellows are covering the side windows.
All right, let's go.
What do you want?
Open up. Come on, Field. We want to talk to you.
Yeah, I'll be there in a minute. Take it easy.
Open up, Field. Police officers.
All right, I'll be there in a minute.
Let's go. He's stalling.
All right. Locked. Come on, let's hit it.
All right. All right, stand
hey,
still,
mister.
Fireplace, Joe.
I'll get it.
Guys, I'm parole. You cops won't leave me alone. I'm straight.
Bag full of money, Joe. Partially burned.
My money? I could do what I want with it.
You bet you can. Hands behind you. Come on.
I'll shake him down.
All right. He's clean, Joe.
You got him, huh?
Yeah, we got part of the loot, too.
He's trying to burn it.
Charlie and I will shake the rest of the house.
Right, Mac. All right, how about it, Field? We got the money, people who can identify you. A car parked in the driveway, it fits the description. You've been through this before. You got out of queue on December 10th. You pulled this job on January 21st. Is that right?
Like I said, I fell once. I did my time.
Joe?
Yeah, Mac?
Found his wife hiding in the back bedroom. Found a sawed-off shotgun.
All right, let's get him out of here.
Say, Frank?
Yeah?
Message came in for you before I left the office. Forgot about it.
Say who it was from?
No, I didn't leave a name. Here's a number. Why don't you phone right away?
I'll call it now.
We can take Field in.
Good, Mac. Thanks. We'll be right behind you. We want to talk to his wife anyway.
Okay, Field. Let's go.
All right, come on, Frank. Come on.
Hollywood 24709. I don't know anybody with that number.
Well, a simple way to find out is to call him, isn't it?
It's kind of late.
Well, go ahead and call him anyway.
Yeah, here's the phone.
I'll check with you later, Joe. Frank.
Right, Tom. We'll check.
Bye, Tom.
Come on, let's go.
I want to use the phone.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
You got a dime?
Just a minute. Yeah.
I'll leave it for the call. Wonder who it is. Hello. What place is this? Oh. Well, this is Frank Smith. Were you looking for me? Yeah. Yeah, he does. Oh. Yeah, that's the right address. Yeah. I should have known.
Well, what's that?
Call from the Murphy House Cleaning Company.
What were they with?
My brother-in-law. Called him in to clean up our house.
Yeah, what about it?
Now they want to know where to send the bill.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On February 19th, trial was held in federal court, City of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. Harry Q. Field was tried and convicted of violation of the federal bank robbery statute. He received a sentence of 20 years in a federal penitentiary, McNeil Island, Washington. The investigation showed his wife, Dora Field, was not implicated in any way in the robbery. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Frazier. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, Whit Connor, Jack Crucian. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Tonight, it's Barry Craig, confidential investigator on NBC.
Welcome back. Interesting factoid on this one. When they made it for television, the part of the bank guard was actually played by Ben Morris. Ben Morris had replaced Webb on Pat Novak when Webb had left San Francisco. So it was kind of interesting, shows there weren't any ill feelings over that. Also, the Frank Smith's brother-in-law thing, that was hilarious. I thought that was just some incredible comic relief that was put in there. Really effective. This definitely illustrates one of Alexander's big contributions to the show. And these bits of humor became even more popular with fans as the years went on. Alright, well, we have a few more comments to get into. Comment from Podcast Alley. Adam, I have listened to and caught up on both the Great Detectives and Dragnet podcast in the past month or so. As a watchmaker, I have lots of time at work to listen, and it helps make the day go by. I just realized that could have been a very unintentional pun. Watchmaker does have a lot of time at work. He continues, thanks for your hard work. One thing is, I don't mind your interesting comments, but is now taking over. Interesting. I have to admit, that is a verbal habit. That was more of a, not enough. That you've got to always be aware of. It's one that I have been told about before. Thank you for the comment. Here's another Podcast Alley comment. I know the vote's late, but hopefully we can hit the top 10. Keep up the great work on Podcast Alley. Thanks for the comment. At the time of this recording, right now we're one vote out of number 15 from being in 15th place. Otherwise, we'll finish 16th. To get to the top 10, I'd need another 92 votes, so more than double what I have. I think one thing I don't emphasize enough is that you can vote on Podcast Alley without leaving a comment. In fact, I'd say about two-thirds of the people actually vote without comment. Comment from Madrigal, who writes, I have to respond to recent comments left on the iTunes review screen. The writer charges Adam with reading only positive reviews of his show and his commentary. This is absolutely incorrect. I'm a big fan of this podcast and of Adam's, but I've teased him about a number of his tendencies, which I now find more endearing than bothersome. And Adam has read my comments as part of his podcast, showing an admirably healthy self-confidence and a pleasing ability and willingness to chuckle along with polite criticism. I've kidded Adam about his tendency to use "without further ado" as his regular transition phrase, his quaint accent that he denies having. Well, I don't. That makes me think that he has named his radio Old Top, the Madhouse theme music that leads off the podcast, and the many other minor flaws in the production. In each case, Adam has read them, considered them, and acknowledged my comments, even though they were not solely positive. I think that as the popularity of the podcast grows, Adam will have to be selective in which letters and emails he reads. Otherwise, the listeners' responses would take up more than the episodes themselves. And I'm sure that when selecting which emails to read, he'll choose a representative cross-section of his listeners' most interesting responses, including both praise and criticism. That's what makes it fun to hear. And thanks. I think we could potentially possibly get to a point where I have to screen some out. I don't know if I see that happening anytime soon. I have had a few occasions where I've put off a couple emails and comments until a future show where there's more room for them. But it's something I'm monitoring. If it gets, you know, to be way too much, then yeah, you definitely want to make sure you're not taking way too much time on a regular basis. Thank you for the kind comment. Comment from DMS, what can I say that hasn't been said before? It's a fun show that you're promoting and presenting, and I enjoy your friendly personality as you introduce the episodes. Thanks so much. Love the podcast. Have you ever thought of running the Night Watch series? I stumbled onto it. It seems like the original reality series about police force. Thanks so much. I'm definitely going to do that at some point as part of one of the extras. There were a couple of shows made during the radio era. One was Night Watch, and the other was Unit 99, following actual police officers on the job. It was kind of interesting that you had basically the precursor to Cops being done in the late 1950s. So I'll definitely do those as extras at some point as we look at all the different shows that have talked about police work. A comment here, thanks for the show. I enjoy listening to the show when walking on my lunch break. Keep up the good work and keep up walking. It's good for you. I'm a late discoverer of your podcast and show. I'm probably 2 years behind at this point because I want to listen from the beginning. But at this rate, I will catch up at some point. Like many others, I want to thank you. I can find all of these shows elsewhere, but choose to hear your podcast. You're like having an old friend enjoying the shows with me. Thanks again. All right, we have Enjoy Immensely. This is my first time commenting, but I love your show. From Frank in Stockbridge, Georgia, he says, P.S., I'll vote every day. If only Podcast Alley made it that easy on us. A simple, great show from John, and this is totally my favorite ever. My kids even love it. And finally, this podcast is Dunwell and Adams' comments before and after the episode are well received, signed by Gunny and Camp Pendleton, California. And thank you so much for your comment. And that'll actually wrap it up. If you have a comment, email me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Cast your vote for the show on Podcast Alley, podcastalley.radiodragnet.com. And you can always call the show, the number, 208-991-4783. That's 208-991-4783. Also, be sure to check out the website, radiodragnet.com. And right now, I'm going through my top 40 favorite 1960s Dragnet episodes. Currently up there is number 32, The Suicide Attempt. And we'll have another Dragnet episode on my countdown of favorites posted next Tuesday. But from Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.